workers your part.
Okay. Can we just get an indication, Ajira, 9 o'clock, in terms of membership we have, if we can proceed?
Morning, Chairperson. We have a quorum. You can proceed. Ms. Temple will be late this morning, so she will join us later. Thank you.
Chairperson? Thank you, Chair. If I could just, I'm not sure if the apology has been received, if I could just put an apology on behalf of my colleague, Honourable Van Damme. She is not feeling well this morning. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable McKenzie. I would announce that I deserve it. I think we should start then, given that we have the quorum to start. We'll indicate Ajira if the minister has already logged in. I was trying to check quickly on
this. The minister is just logged in, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you. Honorable members, minister, delegation from the department, as well as from the SASA, fellow South Africans who are following us in different platforms. Today we are meeting as per the notice convening the meeting, which was amended and sent to members. But our focus today will be on broadband, as we would have asked to be briefed by the department, SASA and the SCOP. I just want to make it clear to the members that on the other matters that members would have wanted to cover on this item, namely the DPT project steering committee in terms of reference, the DPT rollout plan, as well as corruption allegations in relation to set-top boxes. Those matters would still come before the committee. As you'd be aware that we had a session with AUTA amongst matters that they raised related to those. And therefore, when the department responds and USASA, they would refresh their presentation to also take into account this matter that as the committee to be briefed on. I just thought it's important that we just formalize that point. Honorable members, also in relation to there is this Huawei prepaid line, Joseph Mstia, Kampong Mabe, Tanya Pramda, one admitted. Please mute your mics so that the meeting is able to proceed well. Having said that, I just wanted to emphasize the point that we're also going to get an update in relation to the updated or amended APPs and strategic plans, and those would also be coming in on the 11th of November. But today it was on the basis that these were APPs that they would be start, and that we needed as a committee to formalize that they are part of our agenda, which would therefore mean that we are dealing with broadband, and thereafter we would look at the approval of minutes as they have been circulated to honorable members. Honorable members, let me also update you that we had agreed applied once again to the House Chairperson and the Speaker's office in relation to continuation of our unfinished meeting at the ABC. We have since been granted to continue on the 18th. Please take note that we'll proceed from where we left so that the committee are able to come to some finalization of the matter. As I would be giving also the minister, I just thought that we should note the apologies at this point formally so that they are part of the record from members who do have, as stated, the apology of Honorable Ntembu, who would join the meeting later. We also have an apology from Honorable Van Dam, who is due to ill health, can't join the meeting today. We also have an apology from Honorable Faku, that whilst we see her on the system, but she can see that she's also struggling with still connection issues on that side, making our engagements at the committee even more relevant. So if she's not able to get in at the time, it would be because she may have lost the connection in that regard. So note that. From the department side, we have an apology from the Deputy Minister, who is unable to be in the meeting owing to a BDM project inspection in the Northern Cape, and therefore not available for this week. We also have an apology from the Minister, who would want to be released earlier at 11 in order to attend the cabinet cluster meeting. So these are the apologies that have been formally received, and we would note them as part of the record. However, our meeting, as already stated, correct and would be able to proceed. Just to avoid maybe disruption, Minister, because I'll hand over to you to do a political overview. Please, for those who have joined the meeting late, let's just make sure that we keep our mics muted if you are not speaking. So that includes Mbasa. So please keep your mic muted. Thank you. We will then, honorable members, give to the minister, the political head, to do an overview and also indicate how the presentation will be approached. This gives the minister also an opportunity to take the committee into confidence on any matter that she also believes is important for the committee to know, so that the committee can interact in the space publicly from an informed position. Otherwise, the real purpose of the meeting relates to broadband briefing by the department and USASA. Honorable Minister, I hope you are able to hear so that we hand over to you immediately. You are all welcome, as I said. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Honorable Chairperson, and greetings to you and all the honorable members and the departmental officials from all the portfolios that are here and any other guests that may have joined us for this important session. Chairperson, we are here to the portfolio committee today to update entitlement or to respond to a request that has been made by the portfolio committee in order to brief Parliament on the broadband rollout. Since this is the first time to this, we have been prepared a detailed briefing that covers all the work that we do, both from the different entities that we are responsible for, and the department, of course, all the initiatives that we have initiated, including the private sector, as they all contribute towards broadband for all. In line with our 2021 annual performance plan target, the department, the target that we have on SA Connect, which is the broadband for all, phase one, to provide connectivity to 970 government sites. 961 has been connected. which talks to 98% of the facilities. Of course, we do have 19% outstanding, which was planned to be completed by the end of October. And this was the infrastructure installed and undergoing various stages of service activation and testing. 10 of these 19 facilities have since been completed by the end of October, as we expected 19, with the remaining 9 now planned to be completed in November. Of course, the delay to person and honorable members was caused by technical challenges experienced during service activation. The team will take you through what happened when we have to do testing after connectivity, after providing infrastructure and trying to manage. Mainly out of this size that we're talking about, the majority, which is about 70%, are schools and health facilities. This we did because we're looking at the priorities that government has set in terms of the NHI project in relation to the health facilities, and understanding that education is another critical element that we needed to work towards digitizing these services on. Of course, in areas where we do not have local area network, we then make sure that we provide Wi-Fi in order to ensure consumption of broadband connectivity. And about 164 facilities have both land and Wi-Fi installations. And of course, most of them, they are scheduled to end at the end of the financial year. Chairperson, we have lots of challenges. One thing about our sector and the work that we do, it's very dependent on the infrastructure side, especially energy consumption. Now, when we experience load shedding or power outages, it really affects the work that we do, as we talk of the delay. Because if we go for testing, if there's no electricity, then it means that we can't do the work, and it also impacts on the service side in terms of the actual speed that we provide. In this project, in terms of phase two, we had working with CBSA commissioned the study on the feasibility study. And as we did that, we were looking at the overall SA Connect in the earlier policy that we had adopted, that of providing connectivity to government sites. COVID has really shown us, and other members, that if we continue to focus only on government or public buildings, then we are not doing right by the people of South Africa, because COVID has shown us that all schools may be collected, all the public facilities may be connected, but people may not have access to those, which is why as part of the engagement that we are saying they must also look at is connecting the entire, the world towards South Africa, including introducing measures that talk to fiber to the home. And this becomes important, because as I said, ours is to ensure that people have access to connectivity and therefore the services that they must then enjoy throughout the connectivity that we're talking about. It shouldn't be then located in a geographical area that for you to access this connectivity must be happened in the office. You should be able to work from home just like as we are doing now, expressing the challenge that we are faced with. And of course, the report is expected to be released in December. I will allow with your permission the team to then get into detail of the work that has been done. As I said, it's a collective effort. On our SA Connect, we had an opted to utilize the state-owned entity through the Treasury and the intergovernmental framework that has been existent, but in government, we have BVI, Centec, and CETA working together on the different elements of connectivity or the different tiers that they are responsible for, and then also from the user side. This testing we are doing simply because we think there's a need for us to leverage fast on what the state has in terms of the infrastructure and the capability that it has. And of course, we then get to be complemented by the private sector where we cannot go, where we cannot afford to do the work. That one of the methods that we had utilized in appreciating that SMMEs play a crucial role in growing the economy, and also realizing that for the better part of our our time in government, the service or the sector has been monopolized with you, and when we talk of massification in terms of beneficiation of the different people that are there, and also, as I said, the contribution towards both local and township economies, as SMMEs play a crucial role, then through broadband infra, because some SMMEs were contracted. I gave the person because this was the first time we had embarked on such a project at a massive scale. We had learned lessons, which is what we are taking to the next level to say, how do we improve? For example, one of the key things that we're looking at, as I mentioned, the impact that COVID has had on us in terms of making sure that we should get everybody connected wherever they are. One of the things that we're looking at was, we do appreciate that the state cannot afford to pay for the entire infrastructure, as we have been doing, because the model that was adopted was the model in order to empower SMEs was a model that was subsidized in the core component of infrastructure and then service, which is what we don't think it has worked well for us, which is why we said let's review that model. Because we shouldn't be paying for infrastructure. I think what's important for us as government is to just create an enabling environment for the industry player to roll out that infrastructure. And of course, as we also have infrastructure companies, they shouldn't be left behind on that. They should continue with their money where they can, but we have to find ways of collaborating with the private sector, and as government, we should focus on that method. Our people having access to the services, and therefore, what the services talk to people having the affordability that we're talking about in terms of the actual connectivity that we're talking about, or the data that we're talking about. So we will be remodeling Jefferson once we finalize the plan to say this is the best approach that we think is going to work for South Africa, including utilizing different technologies so that we can accommodate the different landscape of our country to say which best technology will then enhance the connectivity. Because one of the key things that we shouldn't do as we've been doing or allowing the industry to do, making sure that we provide quality connectivity to the suburbia and those profit-driven areas. But if we do realize that the world is going digital and South Africans shouldn't be left behind, it tells you that if we plan to digitize the entire education system, the entire health system, it tells that there should be quality bandwidth for all, because we wouldn't be introducing different measures and systems because you are located in Kala in the Eastern Cape, and therefore it must be different to the people who are in East London in the Eastern Cape again. So we had made sure that we really try in the model that we will be working on to make sure that we provide quality, which is why it's one of the review elements that we are looking at is the increase of the speed, because currently we're providing 10 megabits per speed. So we have said the team they must work on the feasibility study that takes us to 110 megabits. Of course, we have full appreciation again of the cost that would have to be deployed in order to receive such, but we are awaiting the final modality of how we go about. As I said, the initiative on rolling out will have to be private sector driven, but we'll announce when we receive the final findings and of course have the engagement with everyone in the industry. We have since commenced engagement with the FCT grouping, the fiber to company or home grouping, the CEOs, where we had shared with them in terms of the speed and the need to fast track the connectivity for people of South Africa, and how we can as government make sure that we work with them in order to create an enabling environment for them to be able to go even to the areas that they could not go or they view as non-profit areas. Of course, key to this is the recent announcements and the work, the progress that is being done by our authority in terms of the spectrum process today. Previously, when we put all the obligations that were there, which we reviewed in 2013, in terms of, for example, the connectivity, when they just had to provide a dongle in the school, and then they said, no, we've connected. We reviewed the model to say let's provide the entire education ecosystem in terms of providing the device, the connectivity, and the content, including the training of the teacher that must be responsible for that. And these are the things, Chairperson, that we learn as we get to roll out the services to see which we think we can improve here, we think we have to change here, and therefore the review of phase two will be encompassing all of those. We will be establishing a PMO that must look into that, including working with the infrastructure team that must help us with funding for the broadband. We'll try to approach key stakeholders in terms of funders, but we're waiting for the final outcomes of the feasibility study. Chairperson, allow me to pause there and thank you for the opportunity that you've given to us. You did mention earlier that if there are issues that you think we need to appraise the community of. For now, Chairperson, accept the normal engagement with SABC, as you know, and also SAPO in terms of the challenges that we're faced with. We're still engaging with the key stakeholders in order to find a solution, so we'll be able to provide a detailed brief once those have been finalized. Thank you, Chairperson. With your permission, I can turn over to the DG or whoever that you need.
Thank you a lot, the Minister, the PG, or whoever will be leading, can go. Thank you.
Thank you, Minister. Thank you, Chair. It will be led by DG Chingobeni and his team. Thank you. Please put it on slideshow.
Everyone's been saying certain things to improve. So you have to do quite significantly to in order to improve your rankings. So the ranking is based on three elements. First one looking at technology readiness, and that looks at the infrastructure and also the access to digital content. So in that case, South Africa is doing well. That means that our infrastructure rollout has increased compared to where we were in 2013 and where we are now in 2019. So we're doing well on infrastructure rollout and also the access to digital content. If improved significantly from 85 to 54. Where we are not doing well is on the ICT usage, in particular the individual usage and business usage. On government usage, that usage within government, that has increased compared to the previous time in the world, this kind of an assessment. On the individual usage, we have regressed, and there's a need to address that. And also on the business usage. With regard to the individual usage, we believe that the recently approved National Digital Strategy, Digital Skills Strategy, will go a long way in addressing this, because we will provide people with the necessary skills, both as consumers of technology, but also as on the supply side, where we want to build skills that contribute to the development of the economy by providing solutions and applications to address the challenges that are faced by the citizens in the country. On the business usage, we believe, I mean, even now with the COVID, there has been a significant adoption of digital technologies where many organizations had to work from home. So we believe that as well has changed the landscape, and that will be an improvement. When the government views the implementation of the e-government strategy will assist a lot, because then it will enable citizens to access government services. That will also then increase the individual usage element when the assessment. So we believe with these interventions we should be able to turn this around. And then these will definitely then have an impact on the economy, and also on the social side, where people are able to access government services much easier and cost effectively. So we believe these interventions will be able to assist government in improving the rankings. So the intention is not just to improve the rankings, but there must be meaningful improvements by people benefiting from these interventions. Then we will move to the SA Connect background. So there was a gap analysis that was done around 2013, and it was based on the census just to assess how far people live from the fixed line, the fiber infrastructure. And then what we also established that in the study that's underway, this situation is not changing much. So in this map, we're just saying that the red dots, these are people who are residing far away, that's more than 30 kilometers away from a fiber distribution point. That means there's no fiber infrastructure close by. And if you look at the orange dots, it's about 15 to 30 kilometers away. And then as you move up, the blue dots are the areas where people are less than 5 kilometers away from a fiber distribution point. And as you see on the map, there's a lot of blues, mainly around the metros, the suburbs, and some of the towns. So as you move outside town, then you start seeing a huge gap of infrastructure. So the aim is to try and bring this infrastructure closer to where people live, so then we'll be able to provide high-speed capacity. So this does not show the coverage on the mobile side, but the current usability study is looking at that as well, to get the coverage on the mobile broadband. Then if we look at the approach to SA Connect, of course everyone understands and appreciates that broadband is a significant economic contribution, and it's important that we address issues of accessibility, usability, and affordability. So in terms of the approach, we are looking at the public and private sector-led and also district-based broadband connectivity to ensure that we address even those remote areas. And our goal there is to ensure that 100% connectivity. Initially, the minister indicated the initial plan was, of course, 10 megabit and upgrade to 100 megabit per second. Cabinet has resolved that going forward, we should do a planning 100 megabit per second, taking consideration the requirements to provide such. But in the planning, we need to factor in the 100 megabit per second. And of course, the impact that we hope to achieve is job creation, improved service delivery, and also the contribution to digital society as a whole and economic growth. The key enablers for this to happen on SA Connect, also just in general on broadband, the rapid deployment of infrastructure. Recently, the department published the draft policy on rapid deployment because it seeks to standardize the way municipalities and popular other authorities will grant permission for infrastructure rollout so that the participants will find it very difficult because it's one of the contributors to delays on projects, in private sector projects, and also the cost. So the rapid deployment policy seeks to address such challenges. And the issues of devices content is very crucial, having access to the right devices, particularly in the education and the health sector. So it also to ensure that there is local area network infrastructure to ensure that the broadband service is consumed. And then the processes need to be digitized as well. So these are the critical enablers for broadband to be consumed. And of course then the infrastructure side, the fixed mobile and satellite technologies are considered. So we are not technology specific as we look at the delivery of broadband. We look at all the different technologies because they've got different cost implications for different scenarios. So those remote areas, sometimes in the farms, the satellite could be a better option. But still what we strive for is to make sure that the experience must be of a broadband nature, so we still need to get the same broadband services. And then from a financing point of view, funding is quite a critical enabler. So we're looking at blended instruments, looking at fixed plus and combined with the private sector funding as well, and also explore joint venture models where it's possible. And then the issues of skills, as we indicated that the digital, national digital skills strategy has just been approved and it's going to assist in addressing the issue of skills. With regard to the delivery model, we indicated that the public-private sector model. And then we are looking at partnerships and creation of special purpose vehicles. And then also, where they are publicly or run spam networks, we also consider them if they are sustainable and there is a way to maintain them and scale them into the future. In some cases, in some of the communities, they have community-led networks, also considering such models, whether they will make meaningful impact. And also looking at operator side subsidies and looking at tapping into the fund as well as it gets finalized. And from a partnership, we've got different partners from national, provincial, and local governments, via the state-owned entities. The minister indicated they've got the extensive infrastructure in this area of ICTs. It covers the key player as well in national treasury. And also looking at the local and foreign investors who've got interest investing in this area as they see the critical area and the growing area, potential for the for them. Then this slide attempts to summarize the SA Connect policy. In the sense, the policy has got four key strategic pillars. The first pillar is the digital readiness, so that seeks to address all the policy and regulatory issues. And the result, the issue of spectrum licensing and rapid deployment, and also the capacity of the regulator dealt with under this pillar. And also we look at digital development, which seeks to aggregate government demand in order to address the gaps. So the idea is that we pull together government demand for ICT services. So currently the approach is each government department or even facility will go out to the market to seek for a solution to provide broadband connectivity to their own facility, even if they are in the same building with multiple government departments. So it makes it cost-effectively and not even efficient, just even from a delivery point of view, because you have multiple networks trying to connect different customers within the same area. So it gives rise to duplication. So the idea is that if we're able to pull together that demand, then we can present it together and create a meaningful business case for the sector to provide broadband connectivity because of the high capital requirements to invest in digital infrastructure. And then the other pillar, which is the digital future pillar, at the establishment of the National Broadband Network, which is the multiple network, who actually need to collaborate together. In government, we've already started the work towards that by the rationalization of the measure between BBI and Centec, for example, to create a state digital infrastructure company. So we're able to contribute to that, and we're able to leverage on capabilities within the state, but also then collaborate with the sector as a whole. So we've got a network that covers the country and minimize duplication of efforts and infrastructure. And lastly, the digital opportunity strategic pillar. That looks at demand stimulation side of the broadband. So over the years, the focus was on the supply side, which has been basically three pillars that I spoke to. Then the last one, the digital opportunity was often neglected, but the SA Connect deals with that, and the issue of skills, content, and devices become very important to stimulate the demand for broadband services. And hence the approach to broadband, SA Connect is an ecosystem approach, looking at network services and applications, content, and devices. And the objective is to ensure that we reach the critical mass with broadband. The policy defines the objectives and the targets in terms of speed and quality and also affordability. And then these pillars are the means to achieve those objectives. So we've got affordable services and achieve 100% penetration. And the usage also is increased and we've got sufficient skills that can be exported even beyond the ICT sector. So in terms of the SA Connect approach then, after doing the gap analysis, which we depicted earlier in the map, we said how to close that. So the approach was to have a phased approach to this program, because we're looking at about 41,000 government facilities to provide broadband connectivity to. So the first phase focused on 8 district municipalities, which was also part of the pilot phase. And the 8 district municipalities are also where the National Health Insurance Program is being rolled out. So the intention is that we support the government program for National Health Insurance. But instead of just focusing on connecting the health facilities, we extend the connectivity to other government facilities within those districts. Hence, we look at the 2,100 government facilities within those 8 districts. So basically, a district in every province, except for the KZN, where there are 2 districts, because there are 2 NHID pilot districts there. The provinces of Gauteng and Western Cape were included in the pilot phase, and they were already implementing programs within their provinces. And then with regard to the phase 2, it then focuses on the remaining district municipalities that are not part of the phase 1, so there are about 44 district municipalities there. So the approach, of course, to aggregate government demand so that we stimulate infrastructure or larger, so that the sector with the capital that they have, they focus on the investment that government pays for the services that it consumes when connected to different government facilities. So let's go just back to the target. So the target that we outlined in the SA Connect, of course, within the United States, it recognizes ambitious targets. The intention was that by 2016 we should have achieved 50% connectivity, 5 megabit per second for the population and 10 megabit per second for the schools and health facilities and public sector facilities. That stage was serving a bit better again. The minister indicated that during COVID, it has been proven that even the 10 megabit per second that we have been aiming to connect even from the start is not adequate. So we need to be moving to the 100 megabit per second with the ultimate aim of connecting the government facilities, that's why health and education, at 1 gigabit per second. And for the government facilities, 100 megabit per second. Of course, some of the government facilities require 1 gigabit per second depending on the usage and concentration of the users in those areas. So although we are still very fine achieving these targets, but as we do the planning, in particular now as we are working on the feasibility study, the planning then gets to be informed by the ultimate target to ensure that the technologies that are being deployed, they are scalable enough or provide for an upgrade path to increase the speeds with minimal cost to either government or even the sector itself. So, and the long-term commitment becomes important between government and the service providers. So in terms of the phase one, this is a breakdown on the number of facilities per district with the Kenneth Kaunda in the Northwest, 340, Tuxpan and Mpumalanga, 797, Wartambo in the Eastern Cape, so see more facilities in particular schools there, 1,444, Pitiga Sema, and the Northern Cape, 225, Tabun Futunyan in the Free State, 747, Mgundovi, 771, Mzinachi, 601, and Bembe, 1,210. So that's the scope of the phase two as it was initially contemplated. And so I'm just showing the map of the fiber infrastructure that cuts across those district municipalities. Here we just provide the background information in terms of the challenge that we had in the beginning of the program. In particular, from a procurement point of view, we looked at different options and the efforts to implement the cabinet the resolution on declaring Telkom as a lead agency for broadband, and that was based on the extensive network fiber infrastructure that Telkom has. So I think Telkom has got about 144,000 kilometers of fiber, and the next company BBI at about 14,000. So you can see the huge difference. So each and every operator in the country, one way or another, has got to have some sort of a relationship with Telkom in order to be able to tap into their infrastructure. So cabinet, so that is necessary to pave a way for that collaboration by making Telkom the anchor player to run out and to have allowed other service providers. And I think the challenges just to implement that from the legislative point of view, the technicalization requirements of the PFMA. We're not able to, because we had extensive engagements with National Treasury until we even undertook in 2016 a tender process which was not successful and the players did not meet the requirements. And eventually we started the engagement within the state to look at how do we tap the capacity of the state but still allow for the sector to participate in the rollout of broadband, so we can only constrain the participation to the state. So this is the model then that was finally adopted, where we collaborated with the BBI and SITA, and their roles as follows. If you look from the right side, there is a need to connect to the government facilities, and that last mile and the connectivity in the main is provided by the industry players, both small and established players. So, and that's where then we was provided an opportunity to participate and collaborate with the sector. And it was also driven by the fact that the BBI's infrastructure in the main was a backhaul kind of a network. So to extend that network to where the facilities are, there is a need to bring in other players who either have got networks in those areas or could be play an active role to also support SMME deployment, the participation in the program. So hence here, as part of those access network providers, we've got emerging SMEs and some of the established SMEs as well. Also, even some of the established players. So because it was a pilot, that we can understand the different challenges when we're engaging with small players, even when engaging with the established players. So I think the pilot is giving us those lessons so that we deal with them going into the future as we implement phase two. We understand the different requirements of the sector players depending on their size and the stage of development. And BVI's role is to provide the physical infrastructure and provide that coordination of the different infrastructure players in the last mile. And then takes that infrastructure and connects to the CETA infrastructure, where CETA then activates the services, and that's where the government data and applications are run from. So this is how the program has been structured. However, as we start implementing the program, we faced with the budget cuts to support the fee must fall interventions. So that resulted in about 1.7 billion rand budget cut from the 2.2 billion that was allocated in the MTF period between 2018 and 2021. But as Treasury cut that budget, they actually made a provision that we're going to allocate the money back. They did actually allocate about 1 billion subject to us concluding the feasibility study, but that was before the COVID as well, so that changed. We'll now wait for the feasibility and see how we get the funding for this phase two. But the budget cuts, I mean, what we need to illustrate is that it resulted in us having to scale down the pilot phase from 6135 to 970. But still, these 970 facilities are split across those 8 districts, but we just had to cut the number of facilities per district municipality. Then we are looking at the progress of the SA Connect, where we are now implementing SA Connect. So before we do that, we felt it's important just to explain the concept of connectivity as we understand, so we are also on the same page with the community. As we look at the broadband infrastructure connectivity, it's got two elements. It's got the broadband infrastructure plus the internet service side. And this is the broadband infrastructure, it's often that's what's provided by BVI and internet service provided by CETA. So when we say the facility is connected, it's when we mean that all these elements are active. So the infrastructure is there and the internet service has been activated. So in some cases you find that because the infrastructure is going to be provided first, then there's a lag between the provision of the infrastructure and the activation of the internet service. So we'll await until the service is activated to declare that facility connected. So the picture below is just so from some of the infrastructure, equipment, or elements that are involved. On the left side, you'll see the indoor network cabinet. That's what it's often installed inside the premises, either in the school lab or the principal's office, in some cases, depending on where it's going to be secured. In the health facilities, they've got dedicated rooms in some instances, or several rooms. And then from there is an infrastructure connectivity, whether it's done through microwave in some instances, so in all fiber, depending how far is the facility from a fiber point as well. And then we have intention to upgrade that. So even in cases where we provided microwave connectivity, the intention is that over a period, we should be able to start planning and upgrades that we're able to deal with those the high speeds that are required in the future. And then from there it goes back to the core network where you've got switches, other equipment managed by BVI, and then from there BVI connects back to the data centers. That's where the applications are and the services are managed from. So this is the concept of connectivity, to say that even if you have got all these other elements, which is the broadband infrastructure, extensive as they are, the only ones you have to relay the internet service, we say that that the facility is connected. here we're just showing the progress till today. At the time of submitting the presentation, we had about 951 of the 970 facilities that have been connected. The minister did indicate that by end of October, we were left with 19, and then we also connected 10 more facilities by the end of October. So we're left with 9 facilities. Then we've also received an update overnight that 4 more facilities have been connected. So at the moment, we're at 965. So it means we're only left with 5 facilities in the Nkumuzo area. And then once, because they are all connected from the same network, once the technical glitch that is resolved, it means all the 5 facilities will be connected. And by that, then we'll have completed the 970. So we still believe that the remaining 5 facilities, we should be able to complete it by during November, as soon as we've resolved that technical glitch that we're having there. Here we're also just showing the progress, but looking at the distribution of the facilities that have been connected based on the type of facility. So in this case, we're just showing that 73% of these facilities that are connected are mainly schools and health facilities. The minister indicated that these are the key facilities to enable education and health. But there's a need that as we move forward, we're able to address the elements of where these need to be provided, even in the comfort of people's homes. So this is where we are in terms of the progress in type of facilities. What we also did, Minister indicated that in some of these facilities we established that as much as we have provided the cabinet here, which is where the internet service terminates at the facility, if there is no Wi-Fi or there's a cable to connect these PCs here or the tablet that the school may have, it becomes difficult, not possible to consume that service. But the service is activated, but not being able to be consumed. So what we did was, after assessing that situation, we decided to take part of the budget just to ensure that we've got an end-to-end solution. In particular, in the schools, which some of the main of the schools are the fee-paying schools, and they have budget to invest on LAN reticulation or Wi-Fi access points installation within within the school. But this is often done by the premises owner themselves. So this now we've commenced with this program. We have finalized about 164, and the intention is that we need to finalize it at the end of the financial year. The teams have been meeting during this last 2 weeks to look at how to expedite that by actually putting more resources across the different districts and provinces, so that we're able to scale the installation of this Wi-Fi, so that the service can be continued by the facilities. So this is one of the schools where, after we had activated the Wi-Fi and the local area network cables, the school was able to start consuming the broadband service and can be used for teaching and learning. So as part of the department's oversight role, after the service had been activated, the team often just do a sample visit to various facilities just to check that it's working, to confirm that, but also to take the experience from the end users as well and assist them with some of the challenges, and also to guide them through the after installation support, how to deal with the support, where if they've got challenges, what do they call. So in terms of the governance framework, because the department does not have a provincial presence, we have established provincial broadband steering committees across all provinces. and then these, they involve, so the department, the entities, the CBI, the CETA, and sometimes we also need to bring in ESAS as well. And we then get to engage with the provincial department, who are the end users. They also bring in then the district teams where there's implementation to be part of this provincial steering committee. So this structure helps a lot in terms of doing the monitoring of the implementation of the program, and also in unlocking some of the challenges that are encountered by the entities as they do the rollout. So it's a very valuable structure support. Support to that internally, that's within the department, then BBI, the project execution teams, which are also mirrored across the provinces, and then the technical subcommittees will look at the technical issues of the installations and try to address those. And also with the service management subcommittee that looks at the monitoring of the service, just to ensure that the service that's being delivered is of the required standard. And those, then they report to what we call the project management committee, which meets every week between the department, CETA, and BBI. And then the issues then they scale to the project steering committee, which often meets once a month. And also then there's the implementation committee that's chaired by the DG and involves the CEOs of CETA and BBI as well, and some of the members from the steering committee, where the strategic issues around the program are discussed, and also looking at some of the future challenges that may emerge and how to direct the programs at the meaningful implementation. Also from a monitoring of the implementation that's there, both BBI and CETA have the network operating center. And then these centers, because they have to monitor their networks on the 24-hour basis every day of the year, so they are able to pick up network faults or challenges that are there with regard to the network proactively, even before the provider and the end user has picked up that there is a problem and able to address those.
Just a minute, DPG. I request that you pick up a bit. I think Janadis can be able to pick up your voice. Thank you. For those that are not speaking, please mute your mic.
Sorry. What about the dark one? I think it can preserve into that.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will try to pick up. So these network monitoring centers, they provide or generate daily reports on the performance of the network, and then those reports are consolidated into what we call the service level agreement reports. These are submitted monthly to the department, and the department uses that as well as the basis for review and then eventually payment of the services, just to ensure that we pay for the services that are active, and where there have been challenges, we also look at what has been the cause of some of these challenges. What we picked up, Chairperson and members, is that you will find that, in particular, the schools, because they need to save on their electricity, so they will switch off their power at the end of their school day. When they switch the power off, it now generates an alarm on the network operating center, because then that site is seen as having a problem because it's not being, it cannot be reached by the monitoring application. So those are some of the issues that we have learned, that they often in an effort for them to save power, also create problems on the side of the network monitoring. But here, the slide just shows an extract from the monitoring tool. Just shows the different callings that are being monitored at this level here. So those that are green, it shows that everything is going fine, there's no issue. the yellow ones, because probably there is a network issue, but it's not severe. Maybe just that the speed has gone down to what is expected, but the service has not been affected significantly. But when the line here, you see there's red, then that means there's a big issue. It's either the whole link is down, so, and that's why then we are able proactively to either send technicians or to investigate what's the problem and try to resolve that. And then on the left side, we've got graphs, which are very busy graphs, but it's what then when you drill down to each facility, you are able to see the usage of the service of that facility over a period. The example here we just show, if you look at the bottom left, the graph, it's the graph that shows the activity at a particular facility over a 24-hour period. So if you believe it's cool, so between up to 1800, you know, the activity, it's very green plot on the graph. Which shows that there was internet activity, so it was being used and it was up to 10 megabits per second. But after 6 o'clock, then the usage diminished. So it's likely that after school there was no usage of the internet because the school would have knocked off. And then the following day, starting in the morning, around 6, 27, there was an increase on the usage of the internet service, and then later it went down. So we're able to use that to see whether the facility is being used and then the usage of that internet service by the different facilities. So in terms of the implementation, we also encountered various challenges. And then, of course, there's an issue of the funding, and it makes it difficult to scale the program. So in order for us to scale the program, there's a need to address the issue of funding. And we commence with a feasibility study, which then we'll use to try and source funding, working together with National Treasury. And then the issue of the reliable power supply is a big challenge, even if we also experience that a lot when there's load shedding as well. And during implementation, it will make it difficult to take technicians will be testing just to check whether the facility can be brought up. And if there's load shedding across the network, it makes it very difficult and it just takes some time. The issue of, and that's also the issue of affordability by the end users for power, and they do the kitchen off of the power. We have the issue of vandalism and theft that occurs in some of these places. You know, people steal even plugs and then you get them. So people will not even realize that the network is not working. Or they realize it's not working, but they won't know why, because they thought it's switched on, but someone has taken the plug. So we've got several challenges. Sometimes there's vandalism in the facility, some of the equipment gets damaged. So we are engaging regularly with the end user facilities, but there is a need, really, particularly the issue of vandalism and theft, for assistance from the law enforcement agencies and also the community themselves to start owning up and protecting these assets, because it's meant to assist them and then particularly their children, or even the other community members. There were also technical challenges, stability of the networks, by those the teams work jointly to try and troubleshoot those and then be able to address them. The devices in some of the facilities, in particular the schools, we find that they don't have sufficient devices to be able to consume that, and then so engaging with the line departments to say they either need to start providing some of these devices so that we can start leveraging the connectivity that is brought through. We had none delivered by some of the net access network providers, as we indicated, some of just merging network providers. But what happened is that the entities, in particular BBI and also CIDA, they engaged with the service providers to provide them support up until when it became clear that we just could not resolve the issue, and then the was consequence management. I just submitted the form from the program in transferring some of those facilities to those entities we are able to deliver in terms of the use. Support that's being provided, but it gets to a point where it's not sustainable. We've had challenges in accessing some of the facilities during COVID, and that delayed the program quite significantly. We had instances where you'll find the COVID case among the technical team, or even where they worked, and then you'll have to require them to quarantine for a 14-day period. Or in some instances, there will be a case in the facility where they're supposed to be working, and that's yet to be able to stay away for quite some time. So that caused some disruption and delays in the program, but we've recovered from that, since we think we're only left with about 5 facilities that we need to complete. So with regards to the phase 2, after engaging with Treasury several years to try and get funding for the program, Treasury recommended that we undertake a feasibility study so that we're able to attract funding even beyond the fiscal, because this is a large-scale program and require extensive funding. And we also have to look at different models to ensure to minimize the budget on the fiscal as we fund the program, so that we're able to encourage the sector even much more better to participate in the program. So we then collaborated with the DPSA, engaged on signed the MOU, where the DPSA agreed to assist us with the feasibility study. And then this provider has been appointed from the beginning of April, and the feasibility study is underway. And the aim of the feasibility study was to develop a business case and an implementation plan, so that it can analyze different options for broadband rollout and also define an appropriate institutional and governance framework. And also how do we make sure that this is run as a program rather than independent projects. So where we are now, we have gotten a steering committee that's comprised of the department, DPSA and National Treasury, which then reviews the work that's being done by the service providers, provide guidance when necessary. And to date, they have completed an inception report, which looks at the approach to the study, and then they also did a baseline study. And then subsequent to that, they've done a technical gap analysis, which looked at looking at the gap from a fiber point of view, but also looking at the fixed wireless and also mobile access gap. So those would then inform the approach in terms of how we close that gap to ensure that we achieve broadband connectivity across the country. So where we are now, they've just finalized, the draft, the connectivity models that are being engaged with the different stakeholders. And then we are on course to finalize the feasibility study by the end of December this year. So then we look at the provincial initiative, what's happening in the provinces. So the provinces are at different levels of broadband, either implementation or planning. Some do have plans, some they don't have plans, and there are those with plans, but those plans are not funded. Some, their plans are funded partially, and there are gaps within those plans. So this is just a summary of where each province is. For example, in Northern Cape, they have taken a resolution that they've been working on a draft plan for a while, and they've decided that now is rather than wait for the feasibility study to take advantage of the outcome of the feasibility study. So they have a province-based plan. And it's important to have this province-based plan from a point that we will be looking more from a providing connectivity, but their role, they look at other development initiatives which can leverage on ICT or broadband connectivity, or even assist in prioritizing where this connectivity is in line with their provincial plan. So it's important to have this in main issues to try and get them to be aligned. We've established what's called a broadband forum where we get to meet and discuss these issues and highlight the gaps that are there. And yeah, I mean, they've got different implementing approaches and different implementation agencies, but in the main, CETA is being used as one of the implementing agencies because of the CETA Act that allows the provinces to leverage on CETA for the connectivity. And then we hope that once we finalize the feasibility study, the further engagement to see how we can align the different plans and see how can we leverage on the funding that we are looking at from a national point of view. A couple of challenges, but in the main challenge is around the funding and there's an issue of failure as well that some of the problems do raise, that if you experience delays in the issue of waiting. Hence, we think that the rapid deployment policy will go a long way in addressing such challenges. Then, moving to USASA, this was just more the background that USASA is broadband program and it's also aligned with the SA Connect targets. So, the main issue that challenges that the initial model that USASA looked at was the issue of the subsidy model and looking at how do we leverage on the little resources that they have in order to have meaningful impact. So there is an issue around that approach. And eventually they've come up with the modeling of this approach. And one issue is that the current model only offers connectivity for 2 years. And after 2 years, the contract will last. It was an issue from the sustainability point of view. So, of course, then from the speed, I think now they're aligned with SA Connect and also now trying to look at how they move even beyond the current 10 megabit per second, moving towards the 100 megabit per second that's there. Then USASA has come up with a remodeled approach, so just the address the challenges that have been there over the years, and that they also address the issue of sustainability through this 5-year period of connectivity, and also increasing the capacity and also the bandwidth that's required, so that the facilities are able to benefit from that meaningfully. So the National Treasurer as well is also being engaged in this model and make sure that there's also a monitoring of the connectivity, because this was one of the challenges on how to monitor.
Oh, sorry, my God.
So.
Did I call you?
Please mute your mic, I think that's Lom's, right? Please mute your mic, the e-wallet may not need to come this side, but maybe somewhere else much needed.
Chair, maybe you should try calling her Scotty and maybe answer.
Please continue, DG, so that once there's an interruption, we end up not hearing you well.
Okay.
Please.
Thank you, Chairperson. This just shows the state of the different, as indicated, the challenge with the sustainability of the current model. Some of the connectivity that was done have expired, and now only one of the contracts that still need to be also expiring now. So hence the remodeling that USASA is working on. And this is the current plan is with the APP where they intend to focus and using the remodeled approach. And then looking at the universal service obligations, these are obligations as indicated which go with the licensing spectrum. In particular, it was issued with 1800 and 2100
the spectrum. And you said it indicated that these obligations had to be reviewed because it was just the provision of a dongle, which was not meaningful to the schools that were being connected. So in order to do that, the connectivity had to be end-to-end, looking at an ecosystem approach. So we looked at the devices, the content, the skills that are required by the trainers, in this case the teachers, then the network, because initially we were just focusing on the network. So bringing the other elements, then the service providers came on board, then we allocated about 5,250 facilities, and these they've concluded. These are just in the background. But out of those schools, there were schools that were also allocated to the service providers, which were special needs schools. And these is about 560. So the implementation of this is still underway. Let's just move to the next slide, which then just what the solution entails. So the solution what it involves is got a mobile trolley, and the mobile trolley is meant to be able to move from one classroom to the other during the school hours, and can be stored in the secure room or the principal's office overnight, where the laptops are charged. The tablets are charged overnight, and it includes about 24 tablets or laptops and a projector, and a server as well with content in store for local content. And then there's also a Wi-Fi access point, and there's also a laptop for the trainer as well. So there are two laptops for the trainers. And this solution is, of course, certainly an intervention if we move from a point where the providers, so the service providers, were only providing a dongle, up to where they provide this as well, which then enable at least meaningful education and training to take place. And the department at that stage engaged with one of the service provider to provide training to teachers as well, so they're able to leverage this solution that was being provided to them. It was just a challenge, of course, with the sustainability of that, but we need to continue the training of the teachers, so there's succession planning within the teaching environment. So where we are now, this is just in case that this has been completed. All those main schools have been connected in the distribution per province, but 4,778 of all schools have been provided as part of the universal service obligation. So the current implementation is on the special needs schools. CASA is allocated to MTN, Vodacom, Cell City, and Liquid. And they have, I think Liquid, MTN, and Vodacom have completed the pilots. It's important because the needs for the different schools are diverse. So they have to do pilots before they start with the implementation. So the implementation in the main is as started. There was a delay, of course, to COVID, and that is resulted in a slow start of the implementation subsequent to the pilot. But we understand that the implementation is underway for this. So once this is concluded, it will have also fulfilled the obligation on the special schools. And lastly, we look at the private sector-led initiatives. As we indicated, the department is overall responsibility of coordinating what's happening in the sector, or either of enabling it through the policies that we develop. And on the spectrum side, of course, we license spectrum for 3G and 4G. But the licensing in the country, of course, is not technology specific, so we don't specify the technology should be used. But with regards to 3G, the population coverage, that's the coverage of where people reside, it's about 99% of the people and populations covered. 4G, that's where using the existing spectrum which was refarmed, they were able to achieve up to 92% population coverage. So there has been some improvement. And then on the fixed line side, there was the decline on the ADSL subscription, which is mainly the telecom
broadband offering, but then there's been an increase on fiber to the home connectivity, also in terms of subscription, but also the number of homes that are passed by this broadband. And prior to COVID, there were many homes that were passed by fixed line broadband connectivity, and there was a significant uptake of this fiber to the home, the services to be connected. I think I'll just rush through this. This is just the wireless broadband penetration as well, to show where we are. This is all the states are also coming from the CASA state of ICT report, which is submitted annually to take away, take the growth in the sector. In terms of speeds, we are, when we compare with other, for example, the BRICS countries, there is room for us to improve, in particular with the speed. And we believe now with the upgrades and increased availability of spectrum subsequent to the conclusion of the licensing that's underway by ICASA, we should be able to address this issue on the way we are looking behind on the speed that are being provided. Investment in the sector has been generally increasing over the years, and it's only in the last year there was a significant decline on the investment, but we believe that now with the licensing of the spectrum, it will definitely increase that investment. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Back to you.
Thank you, DDG. Honorable members, you'd of course notice that I would have allowed the DDG to really continue going through the presentation in detail, which also serves as some workshop, given that it is for the first time that they present to the committee on this. And that should also help members to engage with the presentation, I think, more proper. Having said that, I would now allow honorable members who want to engage the presentation to engage with the presentation. May I once more appeal to those who either join or are on the platform to mute their mics, as well as their videos if they are not speaking, so that the meeting can really proceed smoothly and we can hear all the speakers on the platform. Please, I'm making that plea. Honorable members, if I can get an indication of those members who would want to speak at this point. Am I audible?
Yes, you are, Chair. I have my hand up. Thank you.
All right. And to look at the system, you'll also help me on that side, Ajira?
Yes, Chair President.
Okay. I note you, Honorable McKenzie. I just check if the other members would want to speak.
I don't see anything else, Chair.
There is Honorable
Baker.
Okay, those are the two for now. You will indicate if there are other members who want to speak at this point. Let me start with Honorable McKenzie, followed by Honorable Baker.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. Good morning, Minister. And thank you very much for attending our committee. And good morning, colleagues, and guests of the committee, all protocol observed. Good to see you all. Thank you very much for this presentation on SA Connect. It's been with us for a while. Minister, I just have one question for you, given you need to leave earlier. And it's unrelated to this, but it's very important. I think societies or countries always judged by the way it looks after its very young and its very old. And we have a lot of South African Post Office pensioners that are literally wondering whether they're going to be able to eat next month. That's a problem. And then their medical aid, you know, is as you get older, you need doctors and access to medical aid more and more. And there's obviously a problem with Medicost at SAPO. Minister, can you just give an indication to our South African Post Office pensioners that the statutory obligations around their pension funds and especially their medical aid contributions will be addressed and that in fact they have nothing to worry about, or if they do have something to worry about, will you let them know? Thank you. That's just my question to you, Minister, and I'd appreciate an answer on that one. DDG Ngobeni, thank you very much for very important presentation. I think what concerns me more than anything about your presentation is the fact that you referred to SA Connect as still being in a planning stage. Now, SA Connect has been with us certainly for as long as I've been in Parliament, and at least 5 years before that with my ex-colleague Honourable Shin, who took this project really under her wing and interrogated it. The committee then did an oversight in Limpopo and Mpumalanga just to check these sites. And I'm very pleased to see that you've moved away from this model of build, operate, transfer, and hand over to people. And because we saw one site that had been connected, well, it wasn't connected, by Mr. Arthur of Men, who'd been paid, as he said, 20-something million to install the little network that you could probably install for about $300. So I'm pleased that SA Connect is beginning to use competent and effective companies to roll out what is an essential component for the future of our children. And I think, as you rightly said, the COVID pandemic has made that very clear, that we need to digitally connect our population as quickly as possible, as fast as possible, and as effectively as possible. In the shortest possible time. Otherwise, we're just going to have whole groups of our people that are left behind and sitting in darkness while the rest of the country, some of the people in the country and the rest of the world moves forward. So I'm pleased to see this pragmatic approach from SA Connect. My right in the beginning, we saw, and I'm not being, firstly, let me congratulate the DA on their successful Congress. I'm not being politically parochial here. The Western Cape, if you look at the slide that you showed us towards the end there, the Western Cape, together with CETA, partnered very effectively to connect their government sites and rolled out their connectivity across the province. And they did this years ago. Then Gauteng came behind. They did something similar, and they also moved ahead. You can see that in the slide. My question is then, what is the problem in these other provinces? That you can't actually bring CETA and a provincial government together to get them to roll out this SA Connect once and for all and connect our people. What is the problem in these other provinces? When you're talking about the SA Connect, there's lots of we're all going to do this, we're going to do this, and we seek to do this, and the idea is to do this. No, we're beyond talking, we're beyond ideas. We need this thing in the ground, implemented, and we need our people connected very quickly. Then in terms of project management, you know, what I would like to see in a presentation like this is a spreadsheet that says, this is the site, here's a list of sites and projects, this was the start date, this was the finish date, this was how much it cost, and this was the company. And on that basis, you can then monitor how effectively this program is being rolled out. I can't make head or tail of what I see there. I see that there's a company in Limpopo Connection or something, but CETA's doing other things. Why is Limpopo Connection connecting sites in Limpopo? Where is CETA in this process? So it still seems to be all over. I'd like to see that crisp analysis, because then as a committee, we can also practice oversight by holding the department to account and these companies and entities to account by saying, but you said you would finish by January. It's now July. When are you going to finish? So I think we should, you know, if you have that, you know, could we have a look at it? On the first 8 district municipalities that were connected, and I visited the Bembe district, and Limpopo is a beautiful province, that Remember just they had these useless networks that weren't connected. Can you assure me that those 8 district municipalities are connected, up and running, and the schools and government institutions are happily using their networks? Who's providing support at these sites? Is it coordinated through CETA? Can you just give me an idea of who's actually providing support and maintenance for all the SA Connect sites that have been connected thus far? And then who is driving the province-based plans in the particular provinces? Whose offices or which MEC is tasked with driving those? And you mentioned a broadband forum. Is that, I'm assuming that that's the structure that serves as the coordinator between the department and the provinces and the service implementers. Is that correct? And if it is, when does this broadband forum meet? Where does it meet? And who sits on this forum? And what are its powers? Does it have the power to take decisions and to ensure that those decisions are carried out? I've asked you to explain the Limpopo connection for me, please, as an implementing agent. And just as a matter of interest, there was a comment you made where you said, Mr. Ngobeni, that government doesn't dictate the type of technology used. And I did have that answer in response to a written question about the Five Eyes security network and the potential of software backdoors used by foreign companies to basically listen in and eavesdrop on communications, which you can. I mean, it's proven that they have these backdoors in the networks. So is there a reason why government doesn't actually do some investigation into this and then actually look at recommending certain suppliers or recommending certain types of technology? Can you just give me a thinking why you don't do that? Chairperson, thank you very much for your indulgence. I've used up multiple ones, but I'm starting to. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Honorable McKenzie. We now go to Honorable Kubeka. Please lower your hand, Honorable McKenzie, so that I know if you are coming back for follow-up. Honorable Kubeka.
Thank you very much, Chair. But firstly, let me apologize maybe on my side because now I'm having a challenge on the side of the network, maybe by not showing the video. Also, let me greet the minister, all honorable members, the delegation that come today to come and present to us on the side of the broadband. Chair, mine is just also to appreciate on that side on the delegation when they are presenting, because indeed you can see that there is a movement actually on that side. As we know that we were having that interest on the side of the connectivity of the network. So I would like to appreciate, because I can see that there is at least a movement. And also I'm saying thanks on the side of trying a minister to motivate the issue of saying let other entities be merged, because at the moment I'm convinced that I can see that the BBI and the CETA now they are trying to work harder and push in whatever that we were expecting on the side of the delivery. So thanks very much. I would like to thank the DDG, but there are some few questions that I would like to ask. Firstly, DDG, I hear that you said on the side of the global side, synthesis there is where we have regressed actually position 70 to 72 in these 140 countries that are there. What I would like to understand, is there any possibility that can be there in order that we can try to push, because it shows that we were working much more harder with that speed that you have raised on those sites, especially on the side of the economic impact, on the side of the government usage, and this one of the social impact. Is there anything that we can do more harder just to improve in order that we must not regress on that side of the ICT, as it shows that we have regressed a little bit? So secondly, Let me ask, on the side of the provincial broadband status, you were saying there is a visibility study that you've managed that to take it on before these other provinces can just work all those plans that need to be. But I can see that Northwestern Free State, it seems as if they are much more behind, because you can see there are rates on those sides. So I would like just to check, is there anything that can be assisted on the side of the Northwest and Free State on that? Because other provinces, even if the issue of visibility study, you are still busy with it, as you are saying, you are going to conclude by December month. But there is some movement in these other provinces. But you can see that Northwest and Free State is still a frustration on that side. So is there anything, who's going to assist on that, from on those two provinces, just to push them in order that something needs to be done? Because you can see also on the side of the funding also, they are just still stuck. So I would like us to know what is the solution that we can come with to assist those two provinces. So also let me thank on the side of the universal services access and obligation. I can see you didn't just focus on the side of the mainstream schools. Also, you take an initiative on the side of the special needs by having that laptop trolley in order to assist in those special schools. Let me upload that, because also you managed to have the issue of also trying to assist even educators on that side, in order that the progress must be there in those special needs school. So also, what I would like just to ask, since when there is this BPI and CETA collaboration, is there any hiccups also that you can say it needs to be attended to? Or you can see that there is a lot of improvement on working both BBI and CENTEC while they are trying to resolve all those frustrations that are there on the side of the connectivity. So let me appreciate, because now I can see you've tried on that issue of concentrating on the issue of those 8 districts, in order that you can push, especially as we know that it's a passion to us with the issue of health insurance. So you have focused on that this 8 districts, and it seems there is a movement. But is there any other thing that you can say, maybe it's become a frustration maybe when you are dealing with that issue of concentrating on the NHI, because it's the health which is championing that issue of NHI, whilst you are trying to assist with a connectivity network thing. Thank you. I'll come on the second round, maybe.
Thank you, Honorable Rebecca. Please lower your hand so that I know at the time it is a follow-up question. Thank you. I think we'll probably go on the next round of questions, but given the earlier apology by the minister, I would allow responses on this first round of questions, and we can then take up the next round of questions. We'll be guided by yourself, Minister, whether you would want to start now or you would want to come after.
I would like to respond now, sir. Thank you so much, Jefferson, and thank you to the Honourable Mehmet for the questions that was asked. Just to respond to Honourable McKenzie, who asked the question on SAPO pension and medical aid. Honourable members, let me be frank with yourselves to say, as a department, we are really concerned generally about the state of financial affairs of SAPO. in so much that we have then directed the department to assist the court process in looking for an expert so that we can turn it around, just like we did with the SAC. We have confidence in the board that they will not sleep, they will do their best in order to make sure that what is due by the employees and the pensioners of Post Office indeed is not affected. We recently received some court papers wherein the medical aid and pension fund administrator against the Post Office took the Post Office to court, and unfortunately they have lost. I've been informed again that the Post Office met with the medical aid, the MedPost, and worked on a payment arrangement with them. So this is something that at least alerts us, because the department has come on board also whilst we were waiting to undergo the processes of getting an expert to say the board that is responsible to provide strategic leadership to the work that is given to them under Post Office, works with the management, and then they make recommendations to us. And as I said, we intervene when we identify the gaps that we do think that it's important that we then get experts without other interference, but providing that intervention that we have to provide as the shareholder in order to make sure that the concerns, amongst others, that Honorable Mackenzie has addressed. The second one that I would like to respond to, again, that Honorable Mackenzie talked about, is the question on the broadband, the provincial broadband plan and the rollout. He makes mention of the two provinces, Western Cape and Eastern Cape, and then Venezuela asked what is the challenge with other provinces. The DDG was getting to the case, but I am aware
Just a point, Gordon. I'm sorry to interrupt you. It was the Western Cape and Gauteng, the province. Thank you.
And what did I say?
Eastern Cape and the Western Cape. I think you
mean.
Oh,
my apologies. My apologies. Thank you so much. In relation to the issues on the provincial broadband plan, just as I've already made a mistake, I would say Eastern Cape. If you recall, Honorable Members, there was an advent and a tender awarded in the Eastern Cape in relation to the broadband rollout, which at some point we went to court procedure on the processes that were not followed, and then now they found each other. I have been briefed that the project is about to be kickstarted soon. I am aware again, even with the Limpopo that we're talking about, one of the key things that we always emphasize is the need to align with the national broadband plan. With the DDG will talk to it, as we spoke of the provincial broadband committees or the CACOMs that we established, in order to make sure that there's synergy between the work that we are doing at national, and therefore the reviews that we're talking about will also impact on the provincial broadband plans that we're talking about. The Free State and KZN also, and the Northwest Animal that met with the teams in the department seeking guidance and alignment. And CTI is the engaging way it needs to be involved. So even the other provinces, of course, if you look at the two provinces that Honorable Mackenzie makes reference to, it's provinces that at least their economy is doing well, as compared to other provinces that are very rural, and even in terms of the money that they have, they're not equivalent to what the two provinces that we are making. But we appreciate the fact that there's commitment from both of course capital support of provinces and the administrators that are responsible for the plan to be rolled out. Because as I said, work has started even though not the entire rollout has been, but what's important is adherence or compliance to the plan, to the processes that are there, alignment, as I said, adherence to CETA and all those things, so that we avoid the delay that we take each other to court and otherwise. The investigation on allegations, I may not be continuing the batting here, but you make reference to the fact that you appreciate that I mentioned that as governments do not dictate which technology is not used, and you bring the security element to that.
Indeed, as South Africa, we are a technology neutral country. Our policy says so, which is why people, we can't ban anyone from using their technology. But all we do is to say, do they meet the minimum standards that are identified? Once we have the cyber security groups that work on it, led by state security agencies and the other departments that are involved, including our Department for Police Crime. These are meant to ensure that when people utilize the technology, the information can be protected. But of course, we're not going to an extent of saying let's update everything. We are in a process of finalizing our data and cloud policy that will be presented to cabinet. But just to highlight one thing, honourable members, that we should think about even now, as honourable members case that is looking for a tech. The platform that we're engaging on now is not ours. Who's viewing this information? What does one do with this information? As we look into security, we shouldn't only look at equipment only. We've got to look including into the platform that we utilize. The software that is there. So that total policy on protection of information is what must then be encompassed by all. So that must be there. We have two cabinets. President has referred the matters to the National Security Council to look into the issues of security in the technology space, and we will come up with whatever outcome that we come up with in order to make sure that the people or the information of the people of South Africa is protected, and indeed everybody that gets to uses it based on what is the law. But currently, as we speak, nobody from all the technology providers that we have, none of them are controlled in South Africa. So we should look at all the entire ecosystem. Our information is not safe, that is the reality. We are operating in Zoom right now as we have a meeting. Where does this information go to? What are the means, including legislation, that we should be thinking about in order to make sure that we protect our information? So I want them to focus on all the sides, both from the infrastructure side and also on the services side. Chairperson, allow me to say I would then hand over to the team if you feel like they must proceed. And thank you for the opportunity to respond to a few questions. Honorable Kubega's questions are going to be responded to by the DTG. But just to say, yes, we have seen improvements on the state entity collaboration. There are challenges here and there in terms of the things that need to be done. For example, when PBI has done the particular process, CITA must plug in, and then there's the issue of certification that's required by the client, the department. But those are the things that have been resolved. As DDG mentioned, that we have a program management office that is led from the department. So from day to day, including the issues of rapid deployment, where stakeholders are need to be approved, we are attending to those. We have the life of Chairperson, the KZN grouping. It's quite dominant in KZN. The RT groupings are forgotten. There's a particular name that they respect to. And that you find that when they demand their 30%, then they stop the project, which is why we established the Rapid Deployment Committee in the department to make sure that when industry or the operators experiencing those in the process of them deploying the infrastructure, it's easily addressed and that does not take too long, which is why, again, we introduced the policy direction that we issued on the rapid deployment of the infrastructure. It's things that meant to address all of this to make sure that we create an enabling environment that closes all loopholes that can lead to delays as we deploy the infrastructure. Thank you, Chairperson.
Minister, we can then proceed to DG.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Minister, for the responses. So I'll cover some of the responses that we have not covered. Let's start with the first question from Honorable Mackenzie on the SACONET during planning phase. And that likely comes from the funding point of view. So until we resolve the issue of funding, we'll continue to have this gap. So as much as we have connected a few sites. Now we need to scale the program. And then just feel that as we scale the program, because it's going to require huge amounts of funds, let's ensure that we have looked at all the different options and make sure that we the options are cost effective. So we believe now with the conclusion of this feasibility study, it will get us to that point where we're able to implement in a large scale. So the other question was looking at the oversight that was conducted in Bembe, in Mpumalanga previously. And you noted that the talk also raises of the remote approach. But the other element that we have now is the network operation centers, which they want to monitor the facility that's connected. And we take time before we consider a facility to be connected. We first have to assess that it meets the minimum standards. So even if the facility is connected, the service is activated, but if it's below the speed as applied in the service level agreement, we will park it for a while just to say that it's not connected, because we want that as we monitor it again to the service level agreement. So that capability that's being provided by CETA and BBI to monitor the remotely the connectivity, it helps us a lot just so that we are able to only deal with facilities that are connected and continue to be operational. And on a monthly basis, they submit the service level report, which the department reviews and uses as the basis for payment, because those reports will indicate the availability of the site, you know, and then we've got targets that we've got a service level agreement. We check them against that. And we indicated that the challenge that we're having now is that as the schools in the main, the switch of the power, you know, if it will reflect on the service level report that the facility was off. So it was not the doing of the service provider or BBI or CETA, it was because the end user chose to do that. So we have that. But in some cases, we were able to pick where there is a serious network challenge, it could be a power issue where a transformer is blown up and it affected the whole area and then received by the several facilities that are off. Quite some time. So that capability helps us to monitor the continued operation of these facilities. So even though we're connected the other years, we don't only monitor what that has been connected. Anything that has been connected and has been certified that has been connected, we continue to monitor it as part of this agreement. The minister dealt with the issue of the Western Cape and Gauteng, just to say that because the other provinces, you know, the rural provinces, the big challenge there is the indicated in the infrastructure gap analysis is lack of infrastructure. So even before you deal with the last mile connectivity, you still have to deal with the extension of that high capacity backbone infrastructure closer to the area. So it's not only focusing on the last mile connectivity, which remains the challenge that is being faced in Gauteng and Western Cape, and the multiple providers in this area to choose from. But in those other areas, it has got minimal options to provide the connectivity. That, yeah, and we're working with them, the feasibility study is helpful to address some of these challenges. And as we engage with them, what we always emphasize is the alignment with the SA Connect. Even when they engage with the treasury, we need to align with the SA Connect. So even though we have got some funding to start the project, we often engage with them and then emphasize the need to align with what we're doing on the SA Connect international plans. The project management, you noted in the report that we plan to conclude by October. And then 21st October, we left with 19 sites. Just recorded today that we left with 5. So we did track this on a precise basis. That's why the technical committees that we have and the project management committee, which meet on a weekly basis, those meetings basically, the discussion is on a per year basis. So each facility is being discussed and what are the challenges in that facility. So the tracking is at that level, and that's how we're able to know even when we have
the missing, the target, and what are the challenges that are out there. So we the project management is much more detailed. So the five, for example, we know that all five sites are in Ngungundo, and because they're all working through one network, and hence if we are able to resolve the technical glitch, it was a configuration issue. So once we resolve that, we should be able to have them up and running. So we they made it an individual facility level as we deal with the project. In terms of the support and maintenance, so of course the EBI, we went with the access network providers with the issues on the infrastructure side. So, and then first they have to determine where the issue is. Is it on an access network provider or is it on the backhaul side? And then based on that, you'll determine what needs to be done. But the network operation centers are able to pinpoint some of the problems, you know, exactly where the problem is. And CETA, because it's the one who provides the service, and the information that gets provided to the end users is that for the call center, they're able to report it there, and to report for whether the fault or the need is assistance. And then based on the assistance, CETA will know whether the issue is just the sometimes just a user issue, you know, that they need just to troubleshoot through with the user, or it's not even an infrastructure or network issue. So depending on where the problem is, it's either the access network provider or BVI or CETA will provide the support. But it's part of the agreement that the department has with the entities, and we will then have same agreement with whoever they assist them in providing the service. The broadband structures, so the broadband steering committee has been formally established in the province because it takes decisions, you know, with regard to the implementation in those areas. It does monitor implementation and the challenges that are there, but we also leverage on them because it involves the end user department where this facility connectivity is being provided, and also the district officials who are responsible for ICT in the district to participate in these program steering committees. So we meet regularly just to address some of these issues and take decisions. And maybe also deal at the stage with also the other questions raised in terms of where is it run in the different provinces, which offices. It's different. In some cases, it's run from the premier's office. In some cases, it's run in the economic, in the MEC's economic development. So it's different in the different provinces. But the GTOs as well also get involved in facilitating the monitoring of the program. Instead, dealt with the issue of the technology neutrality. It's a principle that's been adopted across the world that as long as it comes to licensing, you know, license technologies because it creates inefficiencies in the system. Because technologies evolve regularly faster than the legislative program. So, however, the basic requirements of interoperability and standards, as the minister indicated, that we ensure that they should be met at all times. Honorable Kubeka asked the question around the global perspective. You know, the fact that we have regressed from position 70 to 72. So, what can be done? Because when we deeper analysis, we realize that the infrastructure issues seem to be under control, you know, and the initiatives, either through the spectrum licensing now that's underway, the fiber to the home initiatives that are being deployed by various sector players, and also the national and provincial government initiatives, just to roll out. So that it's already doing well, but where we are not doing well is in the usage side by the individuals and the businesses. And also from a government point of view, the usage by the citizens to consume government services. So we believe that the national digital skills strategy will definitely assist us a lot to achieve those targets or what the objectives that we've set up for ourselves as government with regard to digital skills. We should be able to address that easily. And then the government strategy, making sure that most of government services now are being provided online. When we do that, it will definitely assist us to improve. So there is a possibility for us to improve and of course better. And then just requires all of us to participate and we also do our part from our side. Yeah, the other question was the what can be done to assist the Northwest and the Free State. So in most cases we find that they need to have plans that they've developed stuff, but they've not been approved because there are also funding issues, you know, the engagement center and all that. The issue of funding often becomes the challenge that will be fund. But we believe now with the feasibility study, because the feasibility study is looking nationwide, and we are also looking at it from a district level as well. So we should be able to work closely with the provinces to either ask them to complete their plan, because the feasibility study will provide additional support and input to them completing their plans, because some of them were looking for funding to develop their plans, but to show that even the development of those plans, it will require some sort of feasibility study. So hence this will become a necessary input to their activities. And on the year goals, definitely we are working closely just to address the issue of the special needs schools. They have different needs, so they're also not left behind on the benefits of the technology. The other question was that where there are hiccups between BBI and CETA. So of course when we started, you know, the collaboration was not as where we are now. Now we believe we are able to operate in a collaborative manner. And we started the program, of course, everyone was focusing more on delivering their own part of the agreement. So we are focused on just delivering on the infrastructure and sit down waiting to deliver on the internet services. But as we're going to work very closely, and we all agree that, you know, the challenges being faced by one affect the entire program. That collaboration has increased significantly, and the teams work very closely even to troubleshoot some of the problems because it requires them to understand what's happening on the CETA network and also what's happening on the BBI, and BBI need to understand what the external network providers are, and they're able to pinpoint that and get the responsible person to resolve that. So we believe we have dealt with you know, some of the key issues around that. The collaboration, we're able to work closely together, and we're able to, you know, able to almost finalize this first phase. I think those are the questions that I made. If I missed anything, the colleagues may also assist me with Sansa, Mr. Mabe as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Kuruchi. I take it that honorable members' questions would have been responded to. I have not got an indication of follow-up. I saw in the chat side even the question asked to the minister, Honorable McCambers put it on the chat that he was satisfied with the answer. Now I'm just raising that in case the minister would have already left the meeting. I will then check if there are other members who would want to contribute, maybe through questions or comments. And if there are follow-up questions, I'll see by indication from the honorable members. Of course, I would want to follow up on some of the matters raised by the members, having listened to responses, just to get some points emphasized. But before I do that, I want to check if there are other members who would want to ask questions or comments at this point.
I have my my hand up on the platform, Chair. Thank you.
Okay, I know you want to check if for those members who have not prioritized those, but you know.
Ms. Kubeka,
Chairperson. And then Asian on the side.
I see Ms. Kubeka
and Shandy. Okay, that's safe for them. Okay, so that will be Honorable Mackenzie, Honorable Kubeka. Can we go in that order, then I'll come after you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you, DPG, Benny, for your comprehensive answers. Just in anticipation of spectrum auctions and the result of that auction, do you anticipate, and I'm probably asking you to speculate here, do you anticipate any service level obligations being placed on as part of the auction condition? And can you see any of that slotting in with the ambitious goals and objectives of SA Connect? That's my one question. And then my second question, we certainly saw it when we visited a school, which was very remote in Limpopo, and they were connecting via satellite. They had this huge satellite dish used to see the intent and the grounds of the school. Do you see satellite connectivity playing a very important part in especially these deep rural areas? And are you using that as a technological solution, or is it simply too expensive? Your comments be appreciated. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair, and also thank you to DPG for taking his responses. Actually, mine, I was going to also appreciate also on the side of saying, since well, they are focusing on the issue of delivery service. They managed to focus also on the issue of monitoring and evaluation. So I would appreciate that, because indeed when you are doing a service and which you know that it's costly and huge, you need also to play that role of monitoring and also to evaluate those projects. But now what I would like to ask also, on the side of the rural areas, is there any assistance that you can manage to connect, or because we know that on the side of the network it becomes a challenge in those rural areas. How are you accommodating it in order that also the rural areas must be managed on the issue of having that connectivity? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kubeka. Hajira, is there anyone before I come in so that then the response takes into account the points I wanted to emphasize?
No one else, Chairperson.
Okay, if no one else, just as you respond to she and the team to the follow-up questions asked by members, just on slide 9 and 10, where you talk about targets and what you would have expected to achieve at a particular time. One can just say that it's been 2020, probably 7 years lost in that score in ensuring that the targets are met. How do you seek to achieve this 100% by 2030? Because this would have been a build-up based on the intervals that you put. 2013, you deliver this. 2016, you deliver this. 2020, you deliver this number. How you think you'll get there? I'm raising this understanding that feasibility study that you talked about would still be end of October, so November 2020, and that doesn't mean implementation in 2020, about that implementation later. Built in that is that between 2013 and 2017, you spent more time on discussing approaches on procurement, which the first is that procurement remains a problem government to ensure that services are delivered on time. Now that it is BBI and CETA, which in any way, at the level of implementation, they will still involve other service providers, which then brings the procurement issue back again. What's the plan now to ensure that, learning from the past, that would not reoccur? So if you can just lift up that point, I think it's been raised before. And again, on slide 27, that's where you show what's happening in the provinces. Just a question there which had been asked about decision making in the forums and so on. Firstly, whether there is a local government representation in those forums. And really my question is based on what one would have seen in the social media space. I think there was one video a week or so ago circulating in the Northwest. I see that you are raising Northwest challenge to be the funding. But there was an RET group that represented business forums in the video. So I'm not talking to the conduct of the city in, but I'm just lifting up two matters that they've raised and how those matters get to be resolved in such forums. One being that for 2 years, they've applied for waivers and they've been in discussions with the municipality, right or wrong, because I couldn't hear the response of the municipality on why the 2 years. 2 years trying to get waivers, then they can't get those. I think it raises the levels of frustration from an investor point of view, because the second point they raise is that necessarily they are not competing for a tender in the municipality, but rather that they have funding, which is a point made even by the minister and yourself in the presentation, that you also look at private partners. But and that delay would cost them because they would have engaged communities, created an expectation that 800 jobs would be created out of this program, but it also means connectivity thereof of the people. So built on it again is therefore on those partnerships, especially where funding may also be coming from foreign investors, whether in kind or real cash injection into a program. The standards thereof, how is that cleared, so that you don't also have inferior standards, and that was thought to be helping the situation becomes a problem later. And unfortunately, when it is a problem, people will point back at the government, because the government was supposed to work with such groupings in a way that can deliver quality service. So if you can just speak to that, because it has got decision-making powers to resolve such problems. Maybe the other point, really, I did hear this point from the minister, because I had this question in mind, that there's an expectation that this sector must transform. And where government is involved, there's an expectation, therefore, that government will be the best driver of that transformation, because it has got regulatory and then policy power to do it. The 80 to 90% infrastructure funding, the model, I understood what the minister raised there, that it was also to help SMEs to start the program and so on, which is quite an opposite of what usually happens, where the bill share operating transfer would be more the private sector investing, and then later on government owning up, which could have also assisted anyway, the asset base for BPI and the new company that you're looking at going forward, which will be the measure. So, but just, I think for me, of interest would be that if it was about kickstarting that, it would be helpful for the committee just to get a sense of the transformation. It may not be now, but who participated, especially because we have an interest on women participation, on the youth, people with disabilities, and so on. So that we also don't get to a situation where we would have spent a lot of money, but we have not really changed what has been happening in the sector. That will then help us when you come with the remodeling on how do you seek to achieve the transformation of the sector in the remodeling that you are looking at, especially where you take away now this part of helping SMMEs to kickstart the program. I hope you do get that point. I think Honorable McKenzie would have raised it earlier on the BOT issue. But I'm just saying, link it also to the remodeling, so that when we support the remodeling, it should be on the basis that we have learned lessons from that one, but this also helps us to fast-track a transformation. And then I'm sure you'll understand this is anchored from what the finance minister would have said in the recovery plan last year, but the president has re-emphasized it now post-COVID as we move forward on the reconstruction of the economy. But when you talk about a major reform that would be there, amongst others, it is in the communications or telecom sector where the focus is on this broadbanding, the spectrum, and so on. So I'm just saying we need then to know that it's not just about the connectivity, which is important, but how it also empowers people going forward in a way that opens up this sector of the economy. So those would be my points of emphasis in terms of what honorable members would have raised already. So as you respond to them, please bear in mind that the responses should also cover these points. I'm sure you'll be ready to respond, DDG.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members for the follow-up questions. So the first one on the obligations with the current spectrum licensing that's been undertaken by ICASA. Of course, the licensing method is within the scope of ICASA, but if we look at the policy direction that was issued by the minister to ICASA to commence this licensing process, one of the requirements of that they need to be the obligations associated with this, and I think it was in terms of the ITA. So there will be some obligations, that's our understanding, that will be imposed as part of the licensing of the spectrum in line with what's in the policy direction. And I think it was also involved, ICASA is one of the key players in the implementation of the current obligation, the enforcer of the regulation. And also now, recently, we've been working with them closely on the obligations that we imposed as part of the COVID regulations, direction that were issued by the minister. So there as well, one of the considerations to get providing end-to-end solution. So looking at reducing the number of facilities that needed, for example, but focusing on end-to-end connectivity. So we would believe ICASA is also aware of this need from government to ensure that the obligations that are imposed are also meaningful, not just to perform a tick box exercise, but there is impact to society as a beneficiary of that spectrum that's been licensed. So we do believe that those obligations will be, we don't know the form, the format of those obligations, the final form, but included. The second question from Honorable Mackenzie was the issue of satellite, whether we consider it a satellite. Yes, it was not in the earlier slide. We look at satellite as one of the options, because there are areas where it becomes cost-effective to use satellite. But the problem with satellite over the years was because of the limited bandwidth and the high cost of bandwidth for deploying satellite. But recently there have been several satellites that have been launched across the world, what's called the KA band, which allows for broadband communications in a much more cost-effective way, because they use smaller satellites, but the planes of them being launched up in the sky. So that makes it cost-effective to access high bandwidth services even using satellite. So satellite is one of the options that's been considered for rolling out GSA Connect, because it's got a role in some of the areas then, but we're just saying that it should not provide an inferior service. So the people are connected via satellite should then also, you know, have meaningful broadband service. Then on the question by Honorable Kubeka on the MNE, just a comment, we'll continue in the monitoring and evaluation, because it does help us as well. It also gives us comfort to know that what we are paying for is for the, what's out there is the problem. Even if there is a bigger challenge which is outside the control of the service providers, at least we become aware, and this government is the face of this service as well. We seek to find ways to also communicate with the service providers, with the end users actually, about this. So I think as we improve and bring more capacity to deal with this MNC as well, we should be able to also improve our communication with the end users, the way we have productively established some of these major challenges which will affect them for quite significantly for quite some time. So they are aware, because the power issue could be another area where they are not even aware, but the effect could be felt by those end users. So we need to find a way to do that. The MNE approach is helping us, which means it goes to the service providers. The rural areas, correctly indicated, Kubega, the challenge of infrastructure availability in those areas is a huge challenge. But where we have successfully brought together the connectivity, in some instances, the community as well now starting to look at how to leverage that connectivity for providing other services. So that's what we are looking for, to do that. Once that connectivity has been brought to connect the government facility, you know, other businesses can leverage, service providers or even local entrepreneurs can leverage that connectivity for their own use. So we still have a dedicated connectivity in the government facility, but because it's going to be a bigger pipe than what is being provided for, it should be leveraged by anyone else from that community, so they also benefit and contribute to their local community. So the big challenge is those issues of power and lack of infrastructure, which means that it takes some time just to bring closer that infrastructure. Chairperson, the question about spoke about the 7 years that we lost in 2013, and yeah, how do we then move to achieve the 2030 target? We are concerned that we have been significant delays on the program, but now as we conclude that feasibility study, the planning is doing it, how to expedite that. So that's why one of the requirements of the feasibility study is a detailed implementation plan is being developed, is to look at the institutional framework which will assist us into rolling out this program in a much more faster way. So that will mean probably multiple implementations in different areas
taking place at the same time. And it's important to say what kind of institutional framework will support that, having such a huge program being implemented across the country, you know, it's spontaneous. So that's one of the, hoping that the feasibility study will assist us in unlocking that, that we are clear on how to achieve those 2030 targets. So if we're able to do that and be able to obtain the necessary funding, we should be able to faster to address those 2030 targets. And that, the other thing is that those targets also speed. So in the planning now, as we plan, we considering that the implementation factor in the need to upgrade that infrastructure in a less costly manner as we move to the 1 gigabit per second. So some technologies like fiber, easy to scale, once you put it there, to increase it to higher speeds, it's less costly if you consider that in the planning stages. So that's what I'm saying, as we do the planning now, those future requirements need to be factored in. Then there was the issue of the procurement as well. The procurement, of course, spent some time earlier between 2014 to 2017 to look at the procurement issues. In-house, we prevent that, because also the IST that was involved in the procurement. What we also did as part of the phase one was to, for example, through BBI appointed a panel of service providers. So, and that service providers have indicated it's a small emerging establishment. Also, even emerging large operators as well, so we could understand the challenges that they face as they roll out. In some cases, the challenges they face when they have to, for example, obtain a way leave, they all have to go to the municipalities to request on the way leave. But in some cases, the capacity, you know, and financial capacity becomes a challenge. And it also is going to help us to address some of the requirements. So in order to deal with the, to minimize the delay, we believe that this approach of having multiple panel of service providers focusing on the specific area helpful, because you could see that those some of the same products were allocated work to be done in some of the districts. In some way, so eagerly we were able to even complete quicker, and where we had issues of non-delivery, we still even dropped them, you know, just to assist in those areas. So, but we believe from a procurement point of view, you know, if you do that upfront, it's an open procurement process where you allow the different providers to participate in the panel, so you don't have to be running a procurement process now and then. So it makes it easier. The only one is for the funding issue, because then that's what determines your contracting period and when you'll also be running another procurement. So that should be able to assist us. Also, the state also deal with partly with the issue of the sector transformation. What we've noted is that has involved this SMEs, some the truck came is in consortia of small SMEs. So they pull together their resources so that they're able to address, and these are SMEs coming from the historical disadvantaged communities, and they're able to deliver on the targets that they set. Then, so, but they need to have that, focused transformation element. We know as part of the spectrum licensing, there is a requirement to address transformation, just even within the spectrum that's being licensed to the established players, and in the one as well, the specific requirement ownership by women, youth, and people with disability. So that brings some form of transformation that's important, that the sector needs to also transform. And so we believe that as we break down the work of the phase two into smaller chunks, it becomes also allows the participation by SMEs. Besides that, also there are those challenges that we've learned through this the phase one, that some of the SMEs, they tend to get into some of these challenges, and then we find that their technical solution becomes very difficult to scale to meet the targets, because we often do not compromise on the targets that we've set in the service level agreements. So it requires them then to change whatever they will have implemented so that they come up with something that is able to meet the targets that we have set with the department and also the entities. On the provincial slides, the question was whether the local government presentation is part of the steering committee. Yes, so the provincial steering committee, it includes representatives from the province and also from the district. The district will have a small technical team that then involves the other local municipalities. But I think what the issue is, which probably leads to the other question Chairperson asked, is the representation there is often from a technical point of view. So it will be technical people involved or responsible for ICT in the district. So it may not necessarily be people who provide the approval sense, that issue of the way it is, and although we're not probably find its way there. So maybe we have to look at that level of participation that is often being driven from an implementation and monitoring point of view to work with people who are very close to the program. So hence the issues, so the way it is, and that they may not be aware of some of the issues there. Then the other issue of the REC group that they raised on the way it is, it is a problem that affects the sector as a whole. Hence, there was a need to have that rapid deployment policy. And also, we have established this rapid deployment coordination center, which works with other government structures, part of the 16. The structure also engages regularly with COPTA as well. So I think the issue is that these processes are not standardized, but in some cases you find that in some of the municipalities, they also do not have capacity to deal with some of these applications because of the system, the cost systems. So there's a need to also address that part from the side to build that capacity and invest in some of the systems. So the application for e-levy submitted, because the most important thing with the way is that you need to check that application against existing infrastructure, so you don't want that the new infrastructure that's being planned during this implementation is actually the damage to existing infrastructure, so that's what causes problems. So if you don't have systems or accurate records or data of the existing infrastructure within an area, or if those records are manual, or paper-based, it tends to take long to do that assessment. So that's where the issue is. But we really agree with what the group raised, that the issue of delaying when the way leaves, it's got an impact on investment, because this investment often the time period of when you need to do certain things. So if your way leaves, like it said in this case, that it took 2 years, they might even lose the funding that they'll have secured to implement the program. So hence the department often gets to be involved with the municipalities or even SALGA, the colleagues, to try and unlock some of these challenges. And I think the other issue was whether the standards with regards to the investment that's coming from the foreign direct investment. So yeah, it's important if you are aware, we always emphasize the issue of alignment with the SA Connect, because they stipulate what should be the standard. And the issue is when the project is concluded, the people who are project owners are also accepting, when they accept the completion of the project, they check it against the standards. For example, what we do as part of implementation of SA Connect, then CETA and BVI has completed their what's called a completion certificate, which is what the technical parameters is captured by the system, automatically generated by the system. And when they concluded that installation, when they said that installation is complete, they collect a test and they generate the results. And that certificate is what the department looks at and says, no, this like the parameters are here meet what's in the SA level agreement. And they were signed by the DVI and also the department, even CETA as well. So if that's followed, then they'll assure you that even when the project was completed for that facility or that area, it met the standards. And then the monitoring then just to make sure that it continues to meet the standards set. Yeah, I think that's my attempt to respond to your questions, Chairperson, and if we some that DG and colleagues may also still come in. Oh, there was a question, Chairperson, of remote link. I'm not sure if ICASA is willing to address that. The Chairperson has raised the issue of the remote link of the approach to broadband. So I'm sure ICASA, CEO, if we can maybe make a comment on that. ICASA.
Printing copy.
Okay. It would appear that the PRAP won't be hearing, but I think you've done your level best, DCG. I've been taking note of what you how your responses would have been, and I take that honourable members would have also been answered, in particular honourable McKenzie and honourable Kubeka, who would have asked the follow-up questions. I think, honourable members, we really have done justice in engaging this presentation, it being for the first time presented to the committee. And I think that helps us then to engage future presentations. Of course, they may not get to the detail of the background and so on. And I think you'd agree with me that we would probably need to just make a quick summary so that we are done with this item and quickly look at the minutes, understanding that members will still have to stretch a bit before they get to connect to the house sitting for this afternoon. Can I then proceed to just the summary to help the secretariat understand how we are taking matters forward? And then after we get to the minutes, when we get to the minutes, we would also not hold the department and other people who may have engagements elsewhere, but the approval of the minutes is really a committee function. That's all.
Chairperson, just an update by the department. Chairperson, just an update by the department on the revised APPs and threat plans, please.
No, I'm talking to the item on broadband. I want us to summarize on this point so that we get back to it. Okay. So if there's no hand, I thought maybe there's a hand that wanted to speak before I summarize the item and move to the next. If no hand, I take it that honorable members, you'd agree that first and foremost, we have received progress which shows that in relation to targets that have been set, especially after the reduction of the budget, there is great progress in that regard, looking at the numbers that have been presented to us for those sites in the different districts. and that there is work being done where they are still the remaining sites, I think the dinosaur sites that remain to be activated and so on. But there's also appreciation from the committee that learning from the lessons of the past, we should indeed support the remote link, which will be also guided in the main by a feasibility study, which is yet to come out, which will also have an implementation plan. And I think that implementation plan will answer the questions Honorable Mackens on a project management approach to help the committee to do its oversight work in terms of each of the sites going to into the future. We will still want to impress that the timelines, which is the 2030, where we expect 100% coverage, that every effort will be put in to ensure that we get to that point. I'm sure the committee is clear that we really need to push connectivity, especially in your rural and the other areas in the urban centers, especially in rural provinces, that we are able to say we are indeed connecting the country as a whole, and that these people can access the service, learning from what COVID lockdown would have exposed as challenges of inequality that exists, even in terms of access to what others would call as basic infrastructure, which should be accessible to the people. The remote link is also supported on the basis that you will also be looking at all the provinces once again. And I think it's an important point, because whilst other provinces would have been able to move, in some provinces, and I would want to make this clear, even if you take Gauteng, indeed there will be different levels of investments in the metros versus the two districts of the West Rand and Sidibeng, which we usually call them the red districts, informed by poverty levels and so on. That at least that intervention would help realign the plans so that those spaces are also looked at, whilst we ensure that we unblock challenges in the other provinces, especially where we need to get state-owned companies like CETA to be involved. And I think the last point really is that the committee is of the view that we are already benefiting on cooperation and collaboration between state-owned entities, like we have the BBI, CETA, as well as SASA, of course, under the stewardship of the department, in ensuring that there is delivery. But I think for us, it is also about reaching the objective of merging some of the entities that can work together in a way that reduces the cost, but also ensuring efficiencies are also realized in the way delivery happens. I think with that, we would be able to get progress reports going into the future. So that will conclude the item on broadband. If we agree with that summary, I would now move to the item which I said it's minutes. I said it's minutes, Ajura, unless the department has a different update now. I have, in the opening of the meeting, clarified that the parts that relate to the update on APPs and strategic plans, the matter that is coming back on the 11th of November. And it was put on the agenda because it was in the ATC and that the committee should be seized with the matter. But with that update of the 11th of November, I thought that item would have been covered. But if the department still wants to say something on it before we get to the minutes, I would allow that. Acting DG?
Yes, Chair. Good morning, Chair. Chair, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Yes, DG.
Yes, Chair. We translated this item to mean that we were supposed to present our revised ATP and we prepared as such. Hence, Tajira is, and it's fine, but we are at your mercy. You tell us how we'd like to proceed. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, I think I would at this point be also guided by members because I thought one would have made that point because I was advised as such before the meeting, but also because we would want members to go through documentation long before the meeting just to avoid concerns that were raised in the previous portfolio committee meeting. But because I'm facilitating and democratic, I can get that from members if they agree with their thinking, that the first input will probably be our way forward on the matter.
Chairperson, we are excellently led and I'm happy to follow your guidance. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Honourable Mackenzie. I take it that there's no objection to that. I think Acting DG, what we would need would probably, if there's documentation available, please send that to members on time so that we go through it. But as I say, I've been advised before I started the meeting that there was a request to look at both CIS and DCPT on the 11th of November. With that having been said, we would now, as I said, would allow the department, if they are pressing matters, to attend to those because the committee will just be processing a set of minutes to complete the meeting.
We thank you, Chair. There no, we may be, with your indulgence, we are going to leave the meeting. Thank you very much. We will see you in so far as the APP on the 11th of November as directed. Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable members would now look at the minutes and I'm sure would then the Secretariat would help us in that regard. On the set of minutes that to deal with. I take it that honorable members would have received all the sets of minutes that are behind in terms of approval. But I also want to clarify that with regard to the other part of the SAPC, those minutes are not circulated because we still have to complete that session with SABC. As I indicated in the beginning of the meeting, that we have been approved to continue the 18th with SABC. So if members can take note of that, I think it will be from the 6th of October, Ashura.
Then we have minutes for the 6th.
13th, 20th, and the 27th. I'll flag the 6 minutes of the 6th now, Chair. Yeah, please do that. Yeah, honorable members, as it is usually the case, with the start From page one, we'll just go through page by page if the member would want to raise any matter there of correction. You will do that. We'll start with page one. Hope the names are now, it's fine. We move to the next page, page two. On page two, page three, on page page four. Okay, so then just note this, I know we have just dealt with one issue of broadband. I'm just saying in the conclusion there, we talked to oversight. Maybe why should I at that point, just to indicate to members that the management committee would meet and work with the administration to process the oversight as it's what we need to do, and try and combine some of the areas of work we would need to do when we get to such spaces. I just thought it's important to put that point. If there are no matters raised, can I get a formal mover and second for adoption?
Chair, I move for the adoption of the minutes.
Honorable Kubega moves. Can I get a second?
I'll second.
Honorable McKenzie seconds. Can we then flag the minutes of the city? Welcome, Honorable Mtembu. We did put your apology before, and so still staying in the meeting.
Thank you,
Chair. So we are now on the minutes of the 13th of October. We're now on page one.
Chair, it's McKenzie, just a compliment and a thank you to the Secretariat for turning on the
Honorable Kubega?
On page one, Chair, I think my initials there, Chair, is Miss NJ, not NK. Yes.
Yeah, please, if you can correct that.
Thank you, Chair.
All right. Honorable Mlala, you were in that meeting. No, I'm just giving you assurance you were in that meeting. You can move to page two.
I was in the meeting, Chair.
No, I was confirming, Honorable Mlala, you were. Honorable members, we are now on page 3. Next page. Next page. Just move on.
Committee deliberations, Roman numeral 11x1, subsection B, that SAPO has reduced its backlog from 5.3 million rand to 3 million rand in October. I think that's items. I don't think there should be a...
Okay. Can we get to the next page? The correction is noted. We're now Now, on the next page, which includes the resolve.
Chair, it's McKenzie.
Honorable McKenzie.
Under Roman numeral 5, under committee resolutions, that SEPA must look at alternate ways to make the entity sustainable without a post bank. Never mind. Sorry, Chair, I was drawn. Thank you.
Okay, all right. Can we then move to the next page? Right, on this page, I think you need to delete that point where it says the committee decided to convene a joint meeting with National Treasurers to interrogate processes relating to the celebration of God's spent from SAPO. I remember when I took time to try and clarify the point that Honorable McKenzie was raising on why we ended up not having such a meeting. Because of that brief that we got. So I think the capturing may have been the initial discussion erased. But after that response, it would not be reflecting the actual outcome of the meeting. So if we can just clear that point. Okay. With that and other corrections, may I just get a mover and seconder again for the minutes?
Yes.
Honorable Newton.
I move adoption with all corrections made. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mutembo. Any seconder? I say Honorable Mutembo, the seconds. With that, Ajira? So that's the minutes of the 20th. Of October, right? That's yes, Honorable Kubeka would want to correct the initials again.
Thank you, Chair.
Not that. So it's important, Honorable Kubeka, to correct this because they may be the reasons why sometimes we are said not to be in meetings when we're in meetings. It's very important.
Yes, Chair.
Yes, we're now on the page where we start with the opening and the welcome. Sorry. You would understand that my limitations with these pages is because the meeting would have also started in my absence when I had the connection problem. I'm sure members would remember that, and is also captured this much. So I'm just saying, as we go along, I will rely more on yourself. We are on the page where we now have page 3, the briefing. Page 4, yes, now page 5. Page 6, committee deliberations. Let's move to the next page. 7. Now on recommendations. Yes, move to the next page. Page 9. We are now on as a speech when also talks to attendant. I can remove her in the second round. For the minutes of the 20th. Honourable members, may I get a move on the agenda? I can't hear you. I'm not sure if it's a problem on my side.
I move to the appeal of the chair.
Honourable Gombo moves. Can I get a seconder? Can I get a seconder? Is that Honourable Kubeka?
Yes, Chair.
Okay, Honourable Kubeka seconds. What is slighted now is the last set of minutes, the minutes of the 27th. Would correct the initials of Honourable Kubeka there on that page. Can we then get to the next page where it says opening and welcome? That's page 2, now page 3.
Chair McKenzie, on page 3, under point 4, Ms. S. Fick, I believe she was an advocate, correct me if I'm wrong, in which case we should just put that title in. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, that's advocate. Move to the next page.
Chair, with your indulgence again, under point 5, we've got Miss L. Abrahams, and I think it's Professor L. Abrahams. Thank you, Chair.
Now, Chair, can we then move to the next page? To the next speech. We're now on recommendations. Anything on page 9? Then move to the next. We are now on page 9, which is the adjournment of the meeting. May I then again ask for the mover and the seconder?
Chair McKenzie, I'll move for you. Thank you.
The McKenzie moves for the minutes. Can I get a seconder?
I second, Chair.
Honourable Mutembo seconds and the minutes are adopted in that score. Honourable members, that then concludes our meeting and the business for today until we are able to meet tomorrow. I must take this opportunity to once again thank you for continuously contributing to the work of this committee, and I know that because we have so many entities to deal with, we seem to be an overloaded committee. We are always at work. But please keep it up. It's the best way to serve the country. Thank you. The meeting stays adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, colleagues.